Chapter 21. Idris. Or that was the plan. Something seared like a knife into Idris's skull. Space around the vulture god abruptly contained vast volumes more than it should, every axis of distance receding away from them, including that vital step from here to there that would remove the ship from the real and place it within unspace. The salvaged ship's gravitic drives were clawing at the substance of the universe, running at full power, as they went absolutely nowhere. An angry rainbow of warning lights spread across his board, and all that power had to go somewhere, use it, lose it, or it would tear the ship in two. He remembered how the Broken Harvest's interceptor had been so careful not to shoot at the Amaru. Possibly the Hoods thought the relics were still hidden aboard that wreck, because apparently the vulture god didn't warrant the same kind of deference. Or maybe they had given the relics up for lost and were avenging the utmost heresy. Gravitic interdiction was theoretical tech. He knew colonial scientists had a model around the end of the war, but had got nowhere with it. He didn't think the Parthenon had it either. Apparently, the hegemony did, though. Apparently, even rogue hegemony gangsters had it. War with the hegemony had always been a possibility, should the colonies decide not to allow one of their worlds to secede to the alien empire. Fighting the force of the hegemony gravity net, Idris had a really bad feeling about how that fight might go, because just maybe the Essiel's non-confrontational manner didn't stem from their not being able to put the boot in when they needed to. Hevea Mundi would doubtless have some interesting reports to file, if he escaped this mess. Right now, Idris felt space stretching to infinity on all sides, making the mere idea of travel in any direction laughable. Behind it, he sensed the mind of the hegemony pilot, the Ogdru. It was like an arrowhead, a killer. There was no real sentience there, just an animal hunger, a predator whose environment was space, both real and otherwise. Unspace would hold no horrors for this creature. It didn't have brain enough for existential dread. And the Essiel had given it access to ship systems so it could hold prey in its net as it stalked them. Yet, the net wasn't perfect. There was a gradient to it, as though the vulture was caught in a bag full of water with a leak in one corner. Perhaps it simply wasn't possible to isolate space perfectly. A maze, then. Idris closed his eyes and cut himself off from his senses, searching. The hunter was undulating towards him, like some vast underwater thing. His imagination cast it with 1,000 eyes, tentacles, toothy jaws, all the sea monsters that had ever troubled human dreams. It was a shadow beneath him, rising from the depths, opening out like the rose petal structure of its own vessel, seeking to engulf. And while his conscious mind shrank from the horrors he'd concocted, the rest of him had taken that gradient, analysed, and followed it. He'd found the flaw in the trap and instinctively solved the proofs required to exploit it. Any human catching a ball must solve complex three-dimensional equations of space and velocity without conscious thought. And for Idris, this wasn't much different. The vulture god twisted, tangled in reality, halfway between everywhere and nowhere. It was both real and unreal all at once. Idris felt a terrible wrench in his mind, which resonated equally in the keening ring of the ship's drives. And then they were gone. They'd skidded sideways out of reality and into the underlying mechanics of the universe. There was a moment when Idris wasn't sure they'd survived it. Instead of the transition into the familiar nothingness of unspace, what greeted him was too bright, too unfocused. The ship around him seemed to exist in 5 or 6 different, slightly out-of-phase versions. And he thought, "We're lost. We're coming apart." He felt they were suffering a loss of integrity, not physically, but philosophically. Perhaps only his own waning belief was holding the ship to this side of existence. He faced this doubt by screaming at it, there in unspace where nobody would ever hear. Just a mad animal bellow of, "I am here!" The ship shuddered around him, then came sharply back together, in a way that owed nothing to material sensation. Finally, the glare turned into the dead screen radiance of unspace. He felt his heart slamming painfully against the cage of his ribs. His lungs burned, as though he'd been breathing something other than air. His splitting headache was like an axe to the skull. Idris Tellemier sagged in his seat, weeping. He wished, more than anything, that he could let go. Just let himself lose consciousness like any sane human being. Who even cared if they were all lost to unspace? Just a moment's peace, a moment's rest. But he was denied that release. It just wasn't in him anymore. The intermediary program had taken that part of his mind out. He'd signed a waiver for it and everything. The program had affected all of them differently, but this was why he was such a good int. Even when he wanted to give in to the darkness, he couldn't. He threw calculations together, hasty and slipshod, sending the vulture out beyond the throughways, off beyond everything, and who cared where? Just away for now. Away into the void, where nobody would ever find them. There was always more void. It wasn't the universe's greatest resource, and you could mine it forever and never run out. 20 minutes, and he drove them back into real space. He'd sunk even lower in his seat, pale and sweating, thinking, "Why do I do this? Why would anybody do this? But what else could I do?" Then he ordered the ship's higher systems to reassemble themselves and woke everyone up.
"You look like shit," was Ollie's considered response.
"Good." Idris tried for a smile, but barely felt his lips twitch. "Hate false advertising." None of them looked particularly perky, he thought. Having to get yourself into suspension after hitting unspace would do that. Nobody seemed to have noticed the whole "we almost ceased to exist" thing either. That particular struggle must have only been apparent to someone with int senses.
"Seriously, though," Chris pressed, "what the hell happened there?"
"The broken harvest had countermeasures," was all he said. No point spooking people more.
"Unspace countermeasures?"
Solis's look confirmed she was aware of the theory, and plainly the Parthenon didn't have the tech yet either.
"Feel free to tell your bosses next time you check in."
It seemed the maverick actions of one SEL Hood could do more to prime the galaxy for war with the hegemony than decades of regular contact.
"Oh, I will."
And of all of them, Solis looked the least hit. Even Kit's body language said he was suffering, with unsteady legs and many twitches of the mandibles.
His screens broadcast jagged bands of static. Solis, though, looked as though she could get back in her armour and fight the Colonial Navy at a moment's notice. For Idris, that thought brought their whole political crisis roaring back. If they really did have mobile originator relics, who the hell should end up with them? The crew all had their own separate loyalties. Unless the things weren't genuine, of course.
What about these trinkets, then? He asked the cabin at large. Now we have Trine.
The Hiver's ghostly face raised its eyebrows.
Well, apparently you've got me, they noted, and I appreciate your collective arrival at Jericho was not some magical gift from the universe responding to my distress at people trying to kill me. So, what service might this humble academic perform?
We have some originator relics, and we need you to look at them, Ollie told him flatly.
Trine's false face didn't bat an eyelid.
Of course you have. Provenance?
No idea. Just found them.
As patronising expressions went, Trine's was no less effective for being insubstantial.
You are, of course, aware, my nomadic naïfs, that just taking a souvenir robs the object of practical value. Its functionality ceases the moment it goes off-planet, and without an idea of its source, its scholarly value is similarly negligible.
It's in some sort of hegemony suitcase thing, Ollie said, deadpan, watching. In suspension. You know, that trick they do that nobody ever saw.
Trine's face froze. Their voice, abruptly disconnected from its lips, said,
Excuse me? You have... What? Exactly?
Just show them, Solis said. Ollie scowled at her but went to retrieve the relics. They had all agreed this was the one thing they wouldn't mention to Hevea Mundi, because there was not a hope in hell they'd be allowed to keep them if Mordant House got so much as a sniff at their existence.
We need you to analyse them, Solis explained, as Trine bent over the floating rods and parts.
They looked like so much dusty detritus, broken things the originators would doubtless have binned had they still been around. Detritus that could save a world from destruction.
Analyse without disturbing them, obviously. Just let us know if they're the real thing. And there's something else.
She nipped into her quarters and came back with a corkscrewed piece of hull metal.
I cut this from the Amaru. I know architects have a signature, and that there's a registry of each one still, from the war. This came from a ship taken by one, recently. I want to know anything that can be known. Is this a new architect that isn't up to speed with the war being over? Is it an old one that's come back? Can you do that too?
Trine's face blinked mildly.
Well, you put quite a price on my rescue, old friend, old soldier. But I put quite a price on my continued instantiation, so we can call it quits. Yes, I can perform both analyses. It's low-level plod, that kind of work. But it will take my units considerable time. I'll set aside a portion of myself for rote functionality, and we'll get the results in due course.
Solis understood that. Part of the colony that was Trine would become a non-sentient cluster, performing the legwork. Then Trine would know the results when this cluster rejoined the whole. As Trine themselves would be reduced while divided, it wasn't something Hivers did on a whim. Kit sorted out some food then, printing a selection. They all sat together in the drone bay to eat as the vulture god drifted, hidden in the cloak of deep space. A little food seemed to take the edge off the superspatial nausea Idris had been feeling, made him feel human again. The company helped too. Ollie and Solis were being civil to one another, and nobody was mentioning the Thunderhead of the future. Kit had some music on, some of that string and percussion-sounding stuff that was his favourite. Idris even found his foot tapping along to the shifting beat as he started to relax. Then he felt... He stood up, spilling his tray, unable to form words. He could feel the universe skewing sideways, the underlying layer of unspace shifting, even as real space stayed still. Everyone else was staring at him. Chris was at his elbow, calling for a medical kit. Possibly she thought he was having a stroke. "Beds, everyone!" he got out. "Suspension, beds, now!" For a moment, he couldn't get his body to work. Then he was rushing towards the command capsule, sandals skidding as he ran. "Idris, what?" They weren't taking him seriously, because another impossible thing was happening, and he couldn't articulate it properly. Even as he hurtled headlong into the pilot station, the proximity alarm went off, and another ship was right there. No, the other ship. The Broken Harvest, with its hungry predator's mind at the helm. The Ogdru had tracked them, tracked him. They'd followed his trail through unspace. This time, wise to it, he could actually see them building the unspace net beneath real space, trying to box him in. He had no time. "Get to your beds!" he hollered into the comms. "Whatever happens, get to your beds!" And he had the engines charging up, killing every safety and failsafe there was, to plunge the Vulture into the abyss before the trap could close on them. They fell away from the reel, and he felt the Ogdru's anger. No, not anger. It was enjoying this. The chase was something it lived for, buried deep in its species' evolutionary history. One more reason never to meet an Ogdru. It would be after him as swiftly as the technology that encased it allowed. He imagined it straining at the leash that was the Harvest's technical specs. Somewhere, the Vulture God would be in chaos, every member of the crew alone and plunged into the nightmare of unspace. They'd be stumbling for their couches, feeling the yawning hunger of the place just beyond each wall, behind every door, at every shoulder. He hoped they'd just focus, get themselves bedded down and in suspension, as if they were children. And pulling the covers over their heads meant the monster couldn't get them. He had no covers. Whatever monster was out there could absolutely get him. He had dropped into unspace with no course, but it wasn't the first time. He found another deep void point and let the ship fall towards it through a series of incremental calculations. He was bargaining with the devil to take them from here to there, shortcutting 20 light years in a matter of minutes. The headache was back, and his stomach was trying to return everything he'd eaten with a side order of acid reflux, but he fought it down. "Nothing I've not felt before." But the Ogdru was breathing down his neck, if it even breathed. He could imagine the questing dart of its head as it sought his trail. In its mind, it swam an endless ocean, navigating riptides that translated into working the Broken Harvest's gravitic drives. The complex maths that challenged Idris's conscious mind was effortless instinct to this creature. He'd always thought he was at home in unspace.
but he saw he was a clumsy intruder.
They roared out of Unspace together, and Idris jumped immediately, borrowing energy from the interstice between real and real. Then the vulture was falling away again, and again, and again, making a series of short jumps from space to space, zigzagging back and forth within the cube of a single light year. In, out, back, forth. Each transition frayed Idris's nerves a little more. His hands were shaking at the controls. This wasn't how you did space travel. This was how you drove yourself mad. There were now too many maps of the universe, real and unreal, overlaying one another inside his mind. He heard the Ogdru. In his head, it was like angry whale song, a deep, long cry, dripping with murder. Idris slung them into real space again. There was a planet there, a star, a whole system. He had a sight of pale ice, of blue about the equator, browns and greens. He caught a buzz of electromagnetism that could have been natural or artificial. He had no time to analyze it because he had to drop again, hands weaving a new course at random, far away across the galaxy from this unknown sun and its unknown world. Maybe he could find it again. Maybe not. They skidded into Unspace once more, spiraling away like a bird with a clipped wing. He was losing track of how many jumps he'd made. He was lost. His mind went completely blank. He was lost. He didn't know where he was. And he always knew where he was. That was the thing about Unspace. It was connected to points in real space. That was the essence of it. That was what people used it for. They were falling through Unspace, and he had lost all connection to where they'd been or where they were going. The Ogdru was gone, outfoxed, howling somewhere because it didn't know where its prey had gone. But its prey was just as clueless. Idris clutched the board, trying to find a beacon, a landmark. Except Unspace had none. Unspace only had the presence moved within the ship. In all the panic, he'd been almost oblivious to it. But now it had his full attention. It had been waiting patiently for him to pause. Now he felt it had coughed politely, just to show it was there. And yes, he knew all the caveats about the presence being a trick of the mind. Except Idris had no doubt whatsoever that there was something out there in Unspace. Perhaps the sole real thing in all of that notional realm. He fixed his attention on the board. Usually the presence at least started off outside the ship. Usually it didn't try to confront him. He was just aware it was there. Until the very dread of existing in the same space was enough to make him want to tear his own face off. Right now, though, it was in the command capsule with him. He felt it. Precisely as he would have been aware of another person. Not the sound of breath, the scuff of sandals, but some subconscious certainty. Something is at my back, in this room. A shadow seemed to flicker at the corner of his vision, and he stared straight ahead, at the board, through the board. He reached out into Unspace in the hope of finding some way out into the real. But they had no origin point and no destination, and that meant they were going to be here forever.
He all but felt its breath on the back of his neck.
"You're not real," he told the board. "You're just the universal response of a conscious mind to the peculiar parameters of a non-material space."
It took him 3 tries to get the words out without stammering.
"You know it's all coming back, Idris."
The slightest whimper escaped him.
"You know why you don't want to admit it to yourself."
A pleasant enough voice, gender neutral, familiar.
"You felt those big battalions on the move, deep within unspace, like great old blocks of stone being shunted down there, like locomotive engines." The owner of that voice had always been fond of old Earth images. They'd had a whole library of salvaged ancient film, non-interactional pre-medio type stuff. It was Lois Tsanko, a classmate after the first intermediary programme. They'd gone out with him in the vanguard at Berlinhof, had Lois, and had vanished into unspace, never to be seen again.
"Not real. No one's there. It's just a ghost. But what happens to people who die in unspace? What if the usual rules don't apply?"
But then the presence was leaning right over his shoulder. He screwed his eyes up to avoid seeing it, and its voice was Rollo's now.
"Your problem, my child, is that if you admit the bastard architects are back, then what was the point? What was the point of anything you did? All that war, just to buy a little breather? Hardly worth it, see right?"
Abstractedly, he wondered if he was undergoing some kind of breakdown. Brain death? Stroke? Some unspace-specific malady? All around him, the featureless plane of nothing extended forever. A prospect too awful for the human mind to grasp. He'd failed all of them. Better if the Ogdru had caught him. Except. And a shadow was indeed passing through the depths of unspace. A dread shadow he thought he'd left behind decades ago, but that some part of him had always looked out for.
"It's true then. The Yamaru was just the start. The architects are back. And we're lost."
Except. Something caught at his mind, a texture within the absence of everything. A scar. Impossible, obviously, because unspace didn't really exist. And no matter what you did, you couldn't mark it. You couldn't create any persistent landmarks here, in the absence of everything. But it was there.
"Intermediary Telemie."
The voice was deep. Human sounding, but not human. The voice of the harbinger, Ash, who had first warned humanity of the architect threat. And it wasn't dead, insofar as Idris knew.
"You should be more at home here," Ash told him. "Don't buckle now."
"What do you know about it?"
Idris demanded through clenched teeth.
"You think I don't know about this?"
Ash could always do any kind of human tone it wanted. Right now, it was bantering, punchy.
"You think I got to Earth by walking? What? You're going to just let your crew die here? Come on, Telemie. Pull yourself together.
Screw you."
But that scar, it was like an asteroid impact, the shock of its landing written into the deep crystalline structure of the rock. Something cataclysmic had happened to create that scar. Something of appalling scale. It wasn't the only such mark in all the universe. But there were few. Very few. And he knew it. He'd seen this one created. The presence was looming behind him and to both sides, far too close. And now it was shorn of personality again. No Tsanko, no Rollo, no Ash. Just that incredible hunger. That distant curiosity. What is this human mind? And how can I break it? Idris wasn't breathing. Wasn't even able to blink as he fed the computations in. Gave the ship a course. A direction. A vector back to reality.
You're not real,
he whispered to the universe. It laid a hand on his shoulder, and he screamed and passed out. Chris. Chris jerked awake to the echo of alarms, sound and vibration from another room, a catastrophe happening to someone else. She was in her suspension pod, and she had been a spacer long enough to recognise the shuddering aftershock of a sudden wake-up without the cushioning chemical cocktail that usually transitioned her to wakefulness. Hello? She called. But comms had nothing but ghosting static for her. And the lid of her pod wasn't opening. She rapped on it hopefully, in case Solis or Ollie were just on the other side. But a creeping dread had been stealing up on her. Something was terribly wrong. She hit the emergency release, and the pod popped open, retracting its medical paraphernalia so that she could sit up. The inside of the suspension bay was empty. Ollie had bedded down in her bubble in the drone bay. Kit had his own pod in his quarters. Her only neighbour was Solis. And the Partheni was... not there. Hello, Chris, to anyone? What's shaking? She asked to shipwide comms. Maybe Solis had just woken up already. Maybe everyone was waiting for her. Somewhere. Utterly silent and not responding to her calls. Then she knew. We're still in unspace. Idris? She called to comms. Idris, what's going on? But that was wasted effort, because they were in unspace, meaning no Idris, no Solis, no any of them. Just her and the vast, chasming universe. Something's gone wrong. Some failsafe had tripped, and the ship must have known to wake her. Probably it had woken everyone, but that didn't help, because there was no everyone in unspace. Just Kerestina Sulin Almier, who didn't know how to fix spaceships. Get to command. She stumbled out of the suspension bay, feeling the dimensions of the ship around her all subtly wrong. Too big, too small, receding off into unexpected nameless directions. And empty. So very empty. Not entirely empty. Chris knew this was how it went, but knowing didn't help. Her shoulders itched, sensing that thing somewhere on the ship, somewhere close, intolerable. Human myth was full of creatures that were anathema to the sane mind. Look upon them and you die. Meet their gaze and be turned into stone. Had some ancient sage somehow touched unspace, in an age before humans had ever climbed up out of the gravity well. Because that was the presence, in a nutshell. As Chris crept through the vacant chambers of the Vulture God, she felt it closing on her, matching her step for step. But its paces were longer, so it grew fractionally closer every time she moved. It was every shame, nightmare, and rejection she'd ever had. It was all these things given teeth and claws, weaponized to be her ultimate nemesis. She slipped her knife from her sleeve, thinking, "Well, I have something for you too, nemesis." Then she was through into command, seeing the captain's chair, the pilot's board. She tried diagnostics, but the ship's systems were all stripped down to the minimum. It couldn't tell her what was wrong. It didn't seem to know why it had woken her. According to the ship, everything was absolutely fine. Peachy, even. Why was she asking? Everything was not fine. Chris had a cold feeling in the pit of her stomach. She needed to... Something scraped. A long, rasping sound. Outside the command capsule. She gripped the back of the captain's chair, almost losing hold of her knife. I couldn't have heard that. There were no other physical presences aboard. Nothing long and disjointed, dragging along the wall outside command. She stared at the minimal ship display, seeing, but not processing. It had moved. It was right outside. Chris could sense it reaching, fumbling its way along like a blind man. There was one precise moment when its search paused, and she knew it had become aware of her. No, no, come on. There must be something here. What's going on? She called up all the information the ship could give her. Why am I awake? There were no mechanical errors. Nothing was flagged except... She was awake because an order had been sent to wake her. Emergency codes overriding the failsafes that would normally keep her under. Idris. But what if it hadn't been Idris? What if Idris was blithely doing his thing and instead something else had woken her? Sprung her into this vacant, insubstantial vessel so it could hunt her down. And it was there, in command with her, right behind her. The inimical. The thing she couldn't ever see. The horror of it flooded her, fingers digging into the back of the captain's chair like claws. Chris lifted her knife, catching a glimpse of her reflection in its gleaming blade. She looked away hurriedly, in case she saw something over her own shoulder. The knife. Yes, the knife. That would be no use whatsoever against the other. But she could still use it. She could sever the ties binding her to this place. She could rob the presence of its prey. It loomed closer. Worse than pain, worse than death, the incarnation of all bad things. She brought up the knife. The ship fell from unspace with a sudden wrench. There was no physical shock, but Chris stumbled anyway. She found herself a meter from where she'd thought she was, with Solace's elbow in her face. In that moment of reflexive surprise, she almost cut her own throat. She locked eyes with the Parthenae over the poised edge of her knife and allowed Solace to take her hand and gently push it away. What? Here, attend. Kit was crouching on the pilot's board. There was a peculiar yellowish foam about his small limbs that Chris had never seen from a Hanny before, and his 6 feet were rattling back and forth erratically. He had brought them out of unspace, she realised, done it manually, using Idris's console. Sound off!
Solis snapped into the comms. Ollie-Anne? Trine? Chris pulled herself together, checking the readouts. Both still under. The general wake-up order only went to the suspension beds. Ollie's in the drone bay and Trine just put themselves under standing up. Idris, why'd you wake us? Chris blinked. Idris! The pilot was slumped in his seat, staring, a trickle of blood running from the corner of his mouth. For a terrible moment, she thought he was dead. Solis tried to take his pulse the old-fashioned way, but Chris grabbed Command's ancient medalizer from its niche by the door. It established he was still with them, but blood pressure, respiration, and brain activity were all flagged as problems. Chris felt panic clutch inside her. Idris was out, and he was never out. He didn't even sleep. But right now, there was nobody behind those staring eyes, and his brain was burning up. We need help. Medical help. Unless you... She looked hopefully at Solis, but the Partheni just shook her head. This goes beyond battlefield trauma. Where even are we? Her words created a silence that rippled out as Chris just stared at her. Because if they'd exited Unspace in the deep void, then that was it. Unless they could get Idris back, none of them could get the ship anywhere. Nobody would ever find them again. A grain of sand in the immensity of an empty universe. Kittering, when you brought us out, Solis started slowly. Zero navigational data was available, the Hanni's translator confirmed. Figures flashed up on its arm screens. According to the computers, they'd been going from nowhere to nowhere with a pilot catatonic at the helm. Jumping them out into the real was the only thing Kit could have done. Chris thought about the doomed freighter Gamin, which had ended up in the deep void and died there in desperation and madness. Unless they could get Idris awake and able to fly, then... Wait, Solis said. We have transmissions. I'm getting... News media types? Entertainment? A rewatch of last cycle's Heirs of Space? What? Trash, said Chris, who secretly enjoyed it. Terrible, terrible slush. She had never been happier to stumble upon bad media in her whole life. Origin? We're... Solis tapped at the screens. Huh? What? Chris craned past her to see what their rebooting computer was showing them as it reformed its map of local space. Holy equity! Did Idris do this? They were still a long way out, far further than any normal exit from Unspace would have deposited them. But there was an inhabited world out there. A familiar one. Well-travelled and populous. Berlenhof, heart of the colonial sphere.